Those countries represent 50%, actually 49, but 50% of all imports to the United States. If your products are going to come to the United States tariff-free, why can't our exports go to your country tariff-free?
Let's see, 175, carry the zero.
Right.
Yeah. Good job.
Yep. I got it.
It's technically 49, not quite 50. It's 49. We are going to be precise on the Intelligent Investment Show, if nothing else.
Exactly 49%. This is where we have to get into tertiary level thinking.
That sounds painful, but okay. We'll try that.
I think it's going to be a choppy year in the bond markets. I think we're going to be talking about small caps next year quite a bit.
In a vacuum, everything kind of evens itself out. It's not played out in a vacuum. It's played out in the real world where some companies are better at navigating these things than others. Some sectors are better positioned than others.
I'm just happy that I got to use tertiary in a sentence today.
I am totally relying on you that you use that in the right context, and I don't know what it means, and I'm not looking it up right now.
I don't know what it means either, but it's on my word of the day toilet paper, so I'm like, well, I'm going to use it, right?
All right. Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show. Matt Dahl of ARPG. We're on this like sporadic sort of holiday season right now. I think we went 2 or 3 or 4 weeks without a show, and then we did one, and then we've been off for 3 weeks. I think we're back in the saddle now, though, right? We're going to meet today, and then we got another one in 2 weeks.
Another 2 weeks, and I think we're kind of rocking and rolling. And looks like we might be making a special announcement for next year.
Yeah, do we want to announce that now, or are we going to hold that one in the...
We'll wait. I think we'll wait. We'll wait till maybe the next show. I think we're going to go over some of our 2025 outlook a little bit. And some of the things we're going to look forward to in 2025. I know I'm looking forward to it.
Leaving them waiting and leaving them in suspense. I love it, man. You're starting off with the cliffhanger, though, right? So we're kind of getting this in the wrong order.
Right. We want them coming back for more, right? It's like the cliffhanger, then it goes to commercial.
That was my approach to dating for a long time, but they never came back. So maybe I'm wrong. We had a nice little pre-production call yesterday, so I'm going to kind of dive right into it because this was, I think we have a pretty meaty conversation for today, a lot to get into. So
we did. It was a full-on ribeye.
The fattier version of the steak, too. We're not even going with the filet. This is the heavy meat. So we talked yesterday about tariffs, and with Trump, he spent a good part of his first presidency trying to address some things in foreign trade policy, and you brought up an interesting side of that and how tariffs in 2025 may not mean what some people think they mean or expect them to mean.
So part of his agenda is obviously leveling the playing field with other countries that we import a lot from and that we also export to. And I think that makes sense. You know, if we're going to import, we're importing, we clearly import a lot more than these other countries do just by the sheer size of our GDP, right? So his idea of leveling the playing field, like, hey, if your products are going to come into the United States, frankly, the biggest market in the world, okay, tariff-free, why can't our exports go to your country tariff-free? Okay, so if you're going to charge us tariffs, we're going to charge you tariffs. That's the general idea. That's what he's trying to do. Well, there's been sort of this hand-wringing and about tariffs and it reigniting the inflation problem that we had to deal with in 2022 and 2023. Okay. So if you look at tariffs and what that really means, you know, what does that really mean? What really is it? Let's start at the very beginning. It's effectively a tax. Okay. So it's a tax. They're adding expense to products and services that we import. Well, how much of it are we really adding, right? Shut my phone off now so we don't get quacked at.
You know. That's okay. I've got that soundbite saved. We can use that one in the future if we need.
How much are they really adding? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's start there. Start with what are we talking about here? Okay. So if you look at China, Mexico, Canada, and Japan, those countries represent 50%, actually 49, but 50% of all imports to the United States. Just those four countries. Okay. So those are the big four. Okay. However, imports represent 14% of US GDP. 14. That's it. So 50% of 14% sounds like 7%.
Okay. Give or take. Yeah.
Right. So if these tariffs that they're talking about being 25%, oh my God, what's this going to do to prices? Prices are going to go up drastically. These 25% tariffs, what's that going to do? Well, that sounds a lot like 1.75% to me. Because if you have, 7% of U.S. GDP attributable to the imports from these four countries being a 25% tariff, well, that's 1.75%.
Hang on, let's see. 1.75, carry the zero.
Right.
Yep. Good job.
Yep, I got it.
We are nothing if not precise on this show. Okay? Right. I caught you right there. It's technically 49, not quite 50. It's 49. We are going to be precise on the Intelligent Investment Show, if nothing else.
Exactly 49%. So I guess technically you can take 1% off the 1.75%. So it's effectively 1.7325%, right? If you had an exact dollar for dollar increase from tariffs from those four countries into the U.S., which isn't, let's be fair, 1.73% added to CPI would not be fun. I mean, we're looking at CPI right now, core CPI, we're at 3.3. We're at 3/10 month over month. So we're running about in the mid threes right now as far as price increases. But that's likely going to cool. Okay. We'll get into why it's going to cool, but call it 3. Call it 2.7. Adding 1.7, 1.8% to that number is not a fun exercise. I mean, now you're talking, you're back into the fines. But it's not going to add 5 or 10 percentage points to inflation. It might add 1.5 at the most, maybe 1.6. That's what the math says, if again, dollar for dollar. But again, it won't. Here's why. These price increases are coming from a net negative position, not a net positive position. What I mean is, this is not price increases from a 1.75% demand in product. This is a price increase from a 1.75% increase in price, which will then cause margins to have to be compressed in order for these companies to sell the same amount of top line units as they currently are without having consumers go down market for cheaper products. Okay. And if you start compressing margin, well, then there's less money to the bottom line, which means your wage growths, your wage increases are going to go down. Your ECIs, your employment cost indexes, are going to start to fall. Okay. They're not going to hire as many people. We're not going to see labor gains. We're going to see labor rate issues. Okay. Here's the thing is, I am confident in this Federal Reserve. I really think they've done a great job these last few years. Okay. But I'm very confident that they know the nuance of what this tariff will actually do and how it will affect not only pricing on a macro end, but how it will affect the demand curve. And I think it will affect the demand curve enough to offset what would be price increases, enough so to where I think it would actually cause the Federal Reserve to cut rates as a result of tariffs. Okay, because again, this is not a demand side pricing pressure problem. This is a fiscal policy tightening mechanism, okay? So fiscal monetary. We talked about this yesterday from my background and racing cars and things. Crankshafts and engine have a counterweight. In order for that engine to not explode, there has to be a counterweight to keep the rod and piston from flying off the end of the crankshaft through the engine, okay? And the Federal Reserve and its monetary policy will act as a counterweight to that, which is exactly what happened in 2021 and 2022 when the fiscal side affects the monetary side. When the fiscal side jammed whatever it is, $7 or $8 trillion down everyone's throat, we had supply chain issues at the same time, which created this inflation problem. We created a demand curve that would not have existed had you not thrown a bunch of money. You hadn't provided a tremendous amount of fiscal stimulus. So we had fiscal stimulus. What came right behind it? Monetary restriction to keep prices from running amok. So I think the Fed will see this fiscal restriction now, which is what it is, because this is not a demand curve thing. This is not prices growing because of demand. It's a fiscal restriction will then cause the monetary side to have to accommodate to make up for it, to keep labor and wages in check, to keep them in their happy place. Now, I don't see there's any way to really measure this correlation. I don't think it's going to look like one of those beautiful correlations where we can look at the 10-year Treasury note and the NASDAQ and watch them just basically run across each other in a perfect negative correlation. I don't think it's going to look like, I think there's going to be a lot of fits and starts. Okay. Yeah. And here's why. This is where we have to get into third level, tertiary level thinking. Okay.
That sounds painful, but okay. We'll try that.
Right. It is. And that's why I never do it. I'm just happy that I got to use tertiary in a sentence today. And
I'm totally relying on you that you use that in the right context, because I don't know what it means, and I'm not looking it up right now.
Right. I don't know what it means either, but it's on my word of the day toilet paper, so I'm like, I'm going to use it, right? So then you get into, okay, so if the Fed then throws monetary accommodation to offset, to counterweight the fiscal restriction imposed by these tariffs, what then is the bond market going to do? What's the secondary bond market going to do, right? I think the secondary bond market is going to do exactly what it did in September. It's going to sell off. Because the economy is still relatively strong. Earnings are good. GDP is good. Labor is still good. We don't see any sort of canary in the coal mine of true recessionary indicators, right? Again, the Fed has done a great job of not landing this plane. They just kind of kept it in the air, actually. There is no landing so far. And I think what we're going to get is we're going to get accommodation that will lead to higher interest rates in the middle of the curve. Your 3, 5, 7, 10 year, that belly of the curve, I think will go up. I don't think it's going to affect the long end of the curve all that much. Okay, it's too far out. But I think that mid short into that 3, 5, 7 range is going to move around. And I think it will buffer the 10 year quite a bit. Okay. So what I think we're going to get next year is a lot of interest rate volatility caused by Fed accommodation that may stem from the tariff, okay? Which is why what we're going to, in our portfolios for 2025, we're going to really rein in duration on our fixed income side a lot. I'm going to keep duration lower than 2 years, but I am confident in this economy. I am confident in the Federal Reserve. I am confident that Trump's going to do a good job for the business community and lower corporate taxes. So I'm very bullish on corporate America. So what I'm then going to do in order to get yield, right, is I'm going to lower duration. I'm also going to lower credit quality. We're going to come away from the treasuries. We're going to come away from those. We're going to go into corporates. We're going to go into high yields because I'm not worried about them servicing those debts. Okay. So I think there's going to be a lot of consternation next year in the bond markets. And I think there's going to be a lot of fits and starts. I think it's going to be a choppy year. I think we're going to be talking about small caps next year quite a bit. There's going to be a lot of earnings growth in small caps. I think they're going to do really, really well. Earnings growth in the small cap area looks great. I think they're going to be attacked several times next year by yields. So it's not going to be a straight shot for them.
Let me interrupt you there, and let's take a little detour through the backwoods here really quick. So let's back up to what you talked about earlier, that it's not fiscal policy. This is fiscal policy, not monetary policy. And I have an example here I want to throw out there. So during the election campaigns, one of the candidates was proposing a tax credit of sorts to give first-time homebuyers $25,000 to help them buy a house, to help make housing more affordable. I submit for your consideration that does not necessarily make housing more affordable if you did that, because what you're doing is just putting a check into buyers' hands, which is then going to increase the price of a house. So if I want to buy a $300,000 house, and now everybody else who wants to buy a $300,000 house also has a $25,000 check to help them buy that house, to me, in my East Carolina math, that just makes that house worth $325,000 now, right? That's, to me, an example of the opposite side of this coin. That's the government giving us more money, which is then going to increase demand, or at least the price of the things that we demand. What you're suggesting is the opposite side of that coin, which is that this is not the government giving us more money to increase prices. This is the government making the house cost $325,000 without giving us the money for it.
Correct.
We're either going to, and we talked about this yesterday, I don't think we've said it on the show, but that basically leaves one of two outcomes.
So that obviously would affect, that would in some way affect demand.
Right.
Which would cause prices to come down, right? Or on the flip side, the rates would have to come down to offset the price of the house to make the payment the same.
Right. And we talked about this at the corporate level yesterday. One of two things is going to happen. Either companies are going to try to pass this tariff, the cost of this tariff on to consumers by increasing prices of something, 7%, 25%, whatever we said. But that's probably that's in a vacuum, definitely going to decrease demand. So they're going to now sell fewer units of that. So they may, rather than selling 20,000 units for $20. They're now selling 16,000 units at $24, or ever how the math's out on that. But at the end of the day, it's a net neutral in a vacuum for revenue. Or they can still sell the same amount of units for the same price and eat the tariff cost themselves, which is going to compress margins. So am I framing that the right way? It's two different sides of the coin. And then on this side of the coin, there's sort of two different outcomes depending on what corporations decide to do with it.
Well, I mean, corporations, they're basically fancy math machines. That's all they are. Yeah. Right?
They're going to charge what they can get, period.
Right. So the bottom line net income has to be a number.
Right.
So if they're compressing margins on the top line to get the same amount of units sold with the higher cost of goods, they're going to have to find those dollars other places down the income statement. Right. Mm-hmm. How are they going to find that? They're going to have to look. So it's going to be, they're going to hire fewer people. They're going to give fewer raises, smaller raises to people. They're going to put pressure on their suppliers. Right. And it's going to compress margins of their down market supply chain people. So all of those things are going to take place.
Okay? Yeah. None of that sounds very inflationary to me.
No. The other thing it's going to do is it's going to allow maybe some U.S. companies to come in and take those places, which I think will be good, good for the economy, but it won't necessarily be inflationary. But I don't see how the tariff in and of itself would cause the Fed to stop cutting rates. I think it's important to delineate between interest rates going up in the bond market side, in that belly of the curve, from the Fed raising interest rates or pausing because of tariffs or cutting because of tariffs. Those are what the Fed, the reaction function of the Fed in terms of its policy rate versus what the secondary bond market's going to do are two very different things. I think they're going to work opposite to each other next year, just as the Fed is going to work opposite to the fiscal side next year. So it's going to be a chunky year. 2025 is the year of the chunk.
Well, we started off with a very meaty conversation of ribeye and fat. So yeah, chunky seems like
it's going to be a fat, chunky. I don't want to get too much into 2025 because that's for the next show.
Hey,
I'm trying to get my ear as close to the edge here.
Yeah, there you go. When you're in a good place, you're dead center. But when you get a little bit excited, we get like half your head. So yeah, let's either calm down or move to your left. One or the other.
Right.
Okay, folks, we got to get refocused here. Sorry. I know we talked yesterday. And I think you mentioned a few minutes ago that you think this is a net positive for the small and mid caps. Maybe not so much of a net positive. Maybe even a net negative for the larger caps. But I want to pump the brakes on that for 1 second, and let's talk about sectors, because there are going to be certain sectors that these tariffs are going to apply to more than others. Certain sectors are going to, and then those dominoes are going to fall. You mentioned that these are going to open up opportunities for U.S. companies to compete with foreign companies, and some of these sectors are going to be dominated internationally, and that's going to open up opportunities U.S. Some of them are dominated internationally, and there's not really an opportunity to compete in the U.S. And then there's going to be other sectors that this really doesn't affect at all. And there's going to be others that this affects in a positive way. So could you try to unpack it at that level? Have you done the homework on that just yet? Or really, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but is that, could you on the fly kind of think through those dominoes sector by sector and not just by capitalization?
62%, 63% of revenue generated in the tech sector comes from international operations. Okay. I'm not 100% clear on how those foreign countries tax those intangible products, your Facebooks, your Googles, those kinds of things, because it's search, it's not. But then there's Apple, like Apple phones, iPhones, right? Those are tariffed, okay? So I think there's going to be a significant increase in our larger tech companies that do export a tangible tariffed product. Because if the tariff goes away, and here's the thing is now the best way to unpack it is you have to then take it to its intended outcome, I'm not saying a likely outcome, but and it maybe is a likely outcome, but it's the intended outcome is for the tariffs to go away. So if tariffs go away, all of a sudden those products become less expensive there. Right, they become less expensive in China. They become less expensive in Canada. They become less expensive in Japan. They become less expensive in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So that would increase volume. Now that, to me, is inflationary. Because now there's going to be a much bigger demand globally for these products. You're going to have a lot more free trade. So the tariff, the intended outcome of the tariff, actually, I believe, is an inflationary thing. Because it will cause more free trade. It will. Here's the thing. Proud to be an American. Our products are just better. They just are. Okay. So that's why they're tariffed, because they know if that iPhone is on the shelf next to whatever Chinese phone is there at a roughly the same price, it's not even a contest. Okay. Same with Korea. Same with everything else and the Androids and all of it. Okay. So once the American red, white, and blue product shows up on those shelves at a competitive price, not just for the high-end consumer, those other countries, they've got issues, okay? They know that, and that's why they've been tariffed. They're trying to support their economy. They want their exports coming to us at a cheap price, but our exports going to them, if those prices go down, that's going to cause a lot more demand on our end, and I think it's going to shrink their end. That is actually that is an inflationary thing, because now, yeah, again, I mean, how much? So if you take iPhones, which 50-60% of those were sold internet, 60% of those were sold internationally, and you drop those prices by whatever 20-25% in these countries, they're going to sell a lot more of them, a lot more of them. Their total addressable market is going to go up tremendously, because if you look at the income cohorts of these different countries. Yeah. It's going to then give a lot more people access to those products. And yeah, that I know we're getting way beyond the first, third, and 17th curve of this rabbit hole, but that's the intended outcome, which would be inflationary. But so if that happens, I'm thinking through this right here, right now, as we're here live, December 13th, in the year of our Lord, 2024. Now we have an issue where interest rates could be a little higher than people think they should be, which would then cause a multiple contraction, a price multiple contraction. But I think there'd be enough earnings to cover it. So I think there'd be enough earnings growth because of the growth of the addressable markets through the lowering of tariffs to offset the price multiple contraction, still leading to price gains.
But now you're talking about equity pricing multiple contraction. We're not talking consumer pricing at this point. We're talking about equity markets.
Now,
right.
This is me talking in a vacuum, okay? Because yields go up, multiples have to go down on the equity side, in theory, okay? However, the market's not like that. The market is people going, wait a minute, you're telling me we're going to bring down the multiple of Apple if they can all of a sudden sell to 400 million more people? That's not going to move the multiple down. It's going to move the multiple up, okay, no matter what interest rates do. So it will be a very company-by-company specific development. So people are going to have to do their homework next year as far as when they build these portfolios. You know, our portfolios, we use individual stocks and we use sector ETFs and like that. But I think they've been saying it's becoming a stock picker's market. I think it's going to be very much so a stock picker's market. And it's going to have, frankly, two binary, I would say binary, that's kind of a strong word, but if the intended outcome happens, I think that's going to be very positive for U.S. companies, incredibly positive. Because, you know, Lee Greenwood, baby.
We've used the phrase a couple of times on the show, in a vacuum. Economics and the economy and the world and the markets, it's actually not played out in a vacuum, right? In a vacuum, it all kind of nets out as a net zero, right? I mean, even at the most basic fundamental level, we have X amount of dollars in the economy. We have X amount of people buying X amount of products. And then you insert any type of monetary policy, any type of fiscal policy, any type of anything of somebody coming in and trying to exert force on one thing to give me the outcome that I think is better for the hole. All right. If that happens in a vacuum, it all nets out, right? You want to put a tariff on something, then we're either going to have to increase prices, which decreases demand, which still hurts their bottom line or nets out to the same effect on their bottom line, or they eat the cost of the tariff and that still gets the same effect on their bottom line. In a vacuum, everything kind of evens itself out. It's not played out in a vacuum, which is exactly what you just touched on right there. It's played out in the real world where some companies are better at navigating these things than others. Some companies are better positioned to navigate these things than others. Some sectors are better positioned to navigate these than others. Even the thing that you started to reference earlier, small and mid caps. This is going to have a different impact on small and mid caps than it's going to have on large caps. And that's where, you know, I'm taking over a little bit more of an active role as a moderator here, but everything that you just said ties together because,
you're good.
Well, thank you. I try once in a while, but everything that you just said just ties back together because you're right. It's becoming a much more, to me, it appears to be much more of a stock picker's market. You've got to do your homework, like you said, and dig in there and figure out what's the difference. Okay. This makes sense. We kind of all know that this might be coming, or we see it's all coming this way, but what does it do to Facebook versus Apple? What does it do to Apple versus NVIDIA? What does it do to NVIDIA versus McDonald's? What does it do to McDonald's versus real estate versus banks? There's so many dominoes that can fall in different directions here, which is a great time to say if you're looking for somebody who's really good at that. I mean, I know a guy in Las Vegas, but
Well, here's the thing is if you look at, I mean, let's obviously take the biggest gorilla there is, right? Well, not the biggest gorilla, but the most popular gorilla being NVIDIA. You know, in fact, China just opened up a anti-monopoly investigation into NVIDIA a few days ago. Okay, so I don't know what is the tariffs that are charged on NVIDIA chips to China. I don't know what that is. Okay, but if there are tariffs on U.S. exports, I'm certain NVIDIA is subject to those. Okay, if those get dropped, okay, you're talking about a company that grows by 32% annualized. It trades at about a 35 multiple. I'm sorry, about a 30 multiple and about 32% earnings. If you make that chip 20, 25% less expensive, it's going to completely infiltrate every computer system there is in China, okay? And you're going to see that growth rate just go parabolic, okay? And I think you'll see the multiple go parabolic, okay? So it could be incredibly powerful for those companies that do a lot of those type of material exports to those countries. However, I think the small and the mid caps will also be a beneficiary, especially in these nascent stages of the tariff talks, because the market will start to price in tariffs on those companies that are going to have to pay it. And they're going to go look at U.S. companies as sort of an offset, right? I mean, you're talking about the S&P 500, international revenue is 40%. Of the S&P 500, okay? Mid caps only 25%. Small caps even less than that, okay? Like 20. So they're gonna have less impact on the international side. So, you know, I think next year is just going to be, I think the small and the mids are gonna be just buffeted a lot by the tariff talk and by the interest rate side. But small caps look really, really good. In fact, I did a little bit of I'm turning pages here, ruining the show. But we're looking at, you know, if we're looking at earnings growth in small caps next year, they look great. Okay, just viewed through the IWM, the IWM, the Russell 2000 ETF, right? We're looking at 42.3% growth on earnings next year on the Russell 2000, just as a whole. If you carve that out into the Russell 2000 growth sector, just the growth companies, right? You're looking at 64.6% earnings growth for 2025 for the small cap growth. 64.5%.
Wow.
Okay. 2026, regular small cap, you're kind of your core. You're looking at 31% for 2026. And that's going to start getting priced in next year, right? We're just now getting 2025 stuff priced in right now. 2026 small cap growth, looking at almost 42% earnings growth in 2026 after a 65% 2025 based on this guidance. So that's pretty strong. Right, there's a lot of growth there, so that's going to provide a little bit of cushion to the small cap volatility if earnings start coming in that strong. That's going to cushion against the interest rate moves because those multiples, they will contract, especially on the growth side, if the earnings are that strong and they're going to catch up to those multiples. Mid caps are good, They're not as good. They're very similar to your large caps. You know, you're looking at mid cap sector as a whole growing by 14.5% next year, 2026, 13.5% versus large cap, which is about the same, 14.8 and 13.5. But you get into the growth, it's a little bit better for the mid-cap, 17.7 for 2025 and about 20% for 2026. Whereas we're about the same on the large caps for 2025, but we're about 16% for 2026. So we're seeing mid-cap pop into 2026, but we also don't have the multiple. We have a much lower multiple on the mid-cap side. Okay, so mid-caps, they're trading about 16, 17 times. So I think mid-caps will do well next year. I don't know if they'll outperform the large caps as a whole. My guess is mid-cap growth will do well next year. Small caps as a whole will do well next year, small cap growth. So we're kind of small cap growth, mid-cap growth, and of course our large cap growth, guys. We really like, here's the thing is, we're going to keep leaning into what we know is going to work on a fundamental side. I mean, earnings growth in the Mag 7, the tech sector, just looks just incredible next year. The NASDAQ, you want to carve out the NASDAQ for 2025, 25.5% earnings growth. 2026 is 20. Mm-hmm. So NASDAQ as a whole.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about some really, really strong growth rates here.
Yeah. If this plays out the way the original thesis was intended, that this is deflationary, or at the very least, it's not inflationary. You said that's a positive, obviously, for real estate, as interest, that lower interest rates, or at least no threat of rising interest rates, is good for real estate.
Right. So this gets into where we have to bifurcate the curve. Okay. We have to look at that short end of the curve that's controlled by the Federal Reserve, right? Versus sort of that middle of the curve, which is controlled by your intermediate, longer term pricing pressures and economic growth. So if the Fed cuts rates to offset these tariffs, okay, because they see it being a economically contractive exercise, right? What then's going to happen is your smaller regional banks, they're going to borrow from the Fed member banks at these lower rates. And what will then happen is that's where the money is lent from for homes, okay? And we're going to see that spread that has been way out of whack. There's been a tremendous amount of dislocation in mortgage rates for quite a while. Normally we have a 1.6% spread between the 10-year treasury note and mortgage and the 30-year fixed mortgage, right? So we're at 4.3 right now, and it's actually up quite a bit in the last week or so on the 10-year. So, okay, historical norm says we should be 5.9 to 6 1/8 on the 30-year fixed. We're just under 7. We're about 6.8 right now, 6.85. For the last couple of years, we've been seeing as the shorter end of the curve has, we've had this inverted yield curve where the shorter end has been on the other side of the long end. We've been seeing these inflated mortgage rates. And that is a direct result of what the banks are getting the money, they're borrowing the money at to lend back out. And I think as the Fed cuts those rates, if the Fed is required to cut rates for whatever reason, because of tariffs or economic contraction or the perceived economic contraction, then you'll start to see those mortgage rates just fall at a much faster clip than the 10-year treasury note, but it will fall at a clip very similar to your short of the curve, closer to your 1 and 2 year treasuries. Get it back into it gets back in that historical norm. Right now it's been as much as 3%. That spread has been as much as 3%. We're looking at it right now at 2.5. We're 2.6 right now. So we're a full 100 basis points higher than where the historical norm is as far as the mortgage, the 30-year fixed mortgage against the 10-year treasury. So there's some meat on the bone there. And I think, again, we kind of touched on this a few shows ago, but having those mortgage rates come back into their historical relationship with the 10-year, save the 10-year doesn't spike up to 5.5%, of course. Yeah. I think that's going to be great for everyone, because obviously there's going to be a lot of refinancing that happens. There's going to be a lot of home buyers going to take. There's going to be a lot of home buying. There's a lot of people that work in real estate. It's a big sector. And those people, again, these are hardworking people that are used to making good money and, frankly, participate in the economy very, very well. And having that group of people being able to participate at a level they've been used to since before 2022, I think it'll be very good.
Yeah. Before I forget, as always, the Intelligent Investment Show is absolutely not for investment advice. We're here for entertainment and education, general amusement purposes only. We're not here to give you investment advice. We're only here to give you our take on what we see out in the world. However, I do know a guy, and he has phenomenal hair, and he's pretty sharp when it comes to this stuff. And he can be reached at 702-655-8300. I've started writing that down in my notes so that I stop saying the wrong number. Matt and his team at ARPG would love to chat with you, I'm sure. You said you're starting your weekend early. I cut you off. When you said you got distracted, that's actually, I think, what you got distracted from was you somehow got distracted from your own rabbit hole, I think.
I did. I went down a different rabbit hole inside the rabbit hole. I don't know that I climbed back out successfully either. So, next show, listen, I'm really looking forward to the next show. Next show is our 2025 outlook and where we think the market's going to go, how it's going to get there, and who's going to take us there.
I'm looking forward to that as well. I think this year I've really enjoyed, I guess we have one more, so I should probably save this, but I've really enjoyed seeing your outlook play out this year, right? Because you've kind of touched on it along the way a little bit. So I'm sure those that followed along, it will be very interesting to hear what Matt and that very well-protected hair gel big brain of his sees coming down the pipe in 2025. Matt, pleasure as always, brother. Looking forward to final show of the year in a couple of weeks. Hope you have a very Merry Christmas, great holidays, all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, brother.
Talk to you in a couple of weeks, my friend.
See you, man. Thank you.